Well, some of the hot talk out of Topeka has a Kansas political scientist up in arms. Seems that from his standpoint, there's some grave misunderstandings of state law, including what constitutes a public meeting and what doesn't. There's also a lot of activity in Topeka to digest these days, with Governor Sam Brownback attempting to remake state government in a dramatically more conservative image. Joining us now to talk about all this is that political scientist and also one of his colleagues from K-State. The political scientist is Bob Beatty from Washburn University over in Topeka. Bob, good morning. Always good to have you.
Hi, good to be with you, Steve.
And joining him is Joe Astrup from Kansas State University, the university that happened to lose to the KU Jayhawks last night, and they lost in Joe Astrup's backyard of Manhattan. Joe, sorry about that.
Well, you know, it hurt. I still say the referees threw the game, though.
You would say something like that. Well, Bob, you're not wild about what you're hearing out of Topeka these days. The president of the state Senate just said that she thought that the Kansas Open Meetings Act meant only that people get to see legislators vote in public, and you think there's a whole lot more to it than just that, Bob. What do you think?
Well, it's not just me, Steve. In the today's Topeka Capital Journal, there's a editorial, and let me just quote a line from that. The editorial board wrote, quote, "The almost total lack of understanding displayed by some legislators about the law, the Kansas Open Meeting Act, and its purpose at a recent informational meeting was incredulous and bordered on arrogance." And then, quote, "Nothing was more amazing than statements by Senate President Susan Weigel, who obviously thinks her constituents and other Kansans don't need to be let in on what's going on under the Capitol Dome," end quote. So that's a pretty strongly worded editorial. And the context of this, Steve, is that myself and a group of professors recently went to the country of Paraguay, where the discussion was about transparency in government. And the Paraguayans want to build a system, they said, where there's checks on, you know, corruption. There's checks on influence peddling. There's a way to, you know, for the people to watch their politicians and their elected officials. And we assured them that there is, and that we've done this in the state of Kansas and in the United States. And so then I returned back from Paraguay to see, you know, some people, some in the legislature acting like, well, you know, as long as the people can see us talk about a bill and then vote on it, that's probably good enough.
Well, let's clarify this for listeners, Bob. When Susan Weigel, the president of the Kansas State Senate, says that the Open Meetings Act means only that people get to see legislators vote in public, where's she missing the boat?
Well, it's the Kansas Open Meetings Act. It's not the Kansas, you know, let's watch them discuss a bill and vote on
yeah.
it. And so
yeah.
What happened was that the district attorney of Shawnee County, Chad Taylor, mildly reprimanded legislators because last year they went to Cedar Crest, the governor's residence, and as with majorities of committees present, discussed, you know, the people's business, discussed possible legislation, discussed, you know, issues, and Chad Taylor said, you know, that sounds like a meeting. And with the majority of a committee, it sounds like you held a committee meeting.
Right.
And some legislators didn't like that. And that's sort of the genesis of this. And then the really fascinating thing is that one of Chad Taylor's assistants told the legislators, well, you can just change the law if you want.
There you go.
Which, again, you know, oh, that's the way to... Instead of abiding by the Kansas Open Meetings Act, well, just change it. You know, if it bothers you that
right.
that you feel like you're being held to this standard.
Well, so, Joe Acer from Kansas State, what do you think is behind some of these misperceptions over there that seem to be bouncing all over the Capitol Dome these days?
Well, part of it is that we've had a huge turnover within the past few years, and we have new leadership, and you know. Sometimes in the case of, let's say, the Kansas Senate, somebody like Steve Morris had been around for almost two decades in the Senate, including in leadership positions for almost a decade. And so as a consequence, he understood and was around when the Kansas Open Meetings Act was being debated and passed into law. And he understood that it says that whenever you get a quorum of a committee together, you have to, first of all, make that meeting, announce it to the public, and the public has to have an opportunity to attend, including news reporters.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's the key thing with the Kansas Open Meetings Act. It doesn't say they can't meet. It doesn't even say where they have to meet. It just says they have to announce the meeting, they have to make it open to the public, and press need to be allowed to come and report on it. And so those are the kinds of things that are very important in terms of the Kansas Open Meetings Act, and some of it is just leadership training. I think there's the need for a pretty aggressive leadership training because, to be honest with you, it's an inconvenience for legislators. It's not, you know, there was, I mean, let's go back to the meetings at the governor's mansion.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is everything that was said at Cedar Crest would have been said in public with or without a reporter being there. But the reality is that the Kansas Open Meetings Act simply says that you have to announce that there's a meeting and give a reporter the opportunity to show up. And you know what? And so what if a reporter would have been there?
Yeah.
You know, it's just an inconvenience as opposed to something fundamentally went on at those meetings that wouldn't have went on otherwise.
Now, let's step back and take a look at what Governor Brownback is doing, gentlemen, with the state of Kansas these days. He's really remaking it in a far more conservative image than we've seen in Kansas, perhaps in state history. I guess one thing I'm wondering, with all these income tax cuts, he wants to continue the temporary sales tax increase. He wants to get rid of the home mortgage deduction. Is he trying to do too much too fast?
Well, I think that the governor and his associates would say, you know, that they wanted to do these things from day one,
right?
But the Senate, the Kansas State Senate, got in its way, and now that the Senate is a conservative Senate majority, I would argue they think it's not too fast. Now do other people think it's too fast? Clearly, some do, but. You know, remember that there's not another there's not elections for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So that majority, conservative majority in the House and the Senate, and then with the governor, they can be in their own bubble for a while, and that's why people are concerned about the Open Meetings Act. And I think there is a sense, if you look at, for example, what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin, there is some sense that get this stuff done quickly, get it in the books, and then move on, and no matter what, get it done. And so I think that there may be a discrepancy between how fast some people think, if it's too fast, but I don't mm-hmm. think there's that feeling in the conservative majority in the legislature.
Joe Astrup, what do you make of all this? Because we haven't seen an overhaul like this in quite some time.
Well, you're right, and it's a very interesting bit of conservative activism, because most of the time when you think about the way conservatives act, it's to go back, so to speak. It's to preserve things and keep the status quo. In this particular case, what's happening is that we see conservatives being activists in order to remake the status quo, in order to bring the status quo not back to something, but towards a new type of governmental operation, towards different ways in which government, basically delivers services. Medicaid is a classic example in terms of being privatized. And so that's one good example. I think we're going to see some other good examples when it comes to things like, for example, bringing back in, you know, the consolidation of certain government units. But probably the most aggressive manner in which he's acting is in the area of taxes. And there, you know, there's a long-term plan on the part of the governor to basically take the income tax and remove it as a source of revenue for state government. And it started last year with the tax cuts in the income tax. But, you know, if you look at the governor's plans, he has it going out into over the next 4 years, basically trying to bring the income tax very gradually down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea being that they lose maybe $100 to $200 million of revenue a year. And if growth exceeds expectations, then they can bring the income tax down even faster.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think there is a sense in among conservatives, as Bob said, we are now in control of things, and if we don't act now, we may not have this capacity to act in such a concerted fashion ever again. And so we need to make sure that we get put into place those reforms that we think are very important. And those reforms start with taxes, but I don't think it'll end there.
You know, Bob, we're at such an interesting point, it seems to me right now, because the courts have been demanding more spending on public schools. There just was a ruling, a significant ruling a couple of weeks back. Brownback, the governor doesn't appear bent to abide by that. And you can't help but wonder if maybe a constitutional crisis just might be in the offing out there, because a lot of lawmakers simply aren't inclined to go along with what the courts are saying these days. What do you see in terms of what might be lying ahead here?
Well, I mean, this is an unbelievable time in Kansas politics because of, you know, not just, you know, the issues, tax cuts and possible social issues, but the huge institutional changes that can take place across the board, including how changing constitutionally what the meaning of an education is in the state of Kansas, changing how Kansas chooses its judges, changing who prosecutes, you know, voting fraud, whether it might be the Secretary of State. These are institutional changes. And that is, these may bring about, you know, great waves of opposition because they'll be going to the ballot boxes for constitutional changes. So that's the, you know, one of the keys to this new Brownback initiative is the institutional changes, literally changing the Kansas Constitution, because obviously the argument is if the Constitution is changed regarding education, we don't have to deal with court rulings down the road. We can stall on that until we can change the Constitution.
Well, we need to get you guys. Yeah, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
I think Bob hit the nail on the head. I mean, the governor and legislature are not, and that they didn't care about the Kansas District Court ruling. They already knew what the district court was going to rule just based upon the precedents that were established previously with the Montoy decision.
Mm-hmm. Back in 2005 by the state Supreme Court, right.
So the thing is about it is that they anticipate being able to change the Constitution so that the state legislature has the sole authority and sole power to determine school funding. And they think, and maybe rightfully so, they'll win passage among voters probably this April. And so they're thinking this is not an issue that we even have to address based upon the district court ruling.
Well, we need to get the two of you guys back on sometime soon to talk about all the big changes going on in Kansas, because so much is going on. We're out of time for this segment, but I want to thank Bob Beatty from Washburn U over in Topeka and Joe Astrup from Kansas State University. Guys, we always appreciate you taking some time with us.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
Thank you very much, Steve.